This episode is sponsored by Edgewood Nursery, producing unusual edible plants in a regenerative permaculture system in so-called Falmouth, Maine. Check out our online storefront at edgewoodnursery.com/shop and use the code SOULCAST at the checkout for 10% off your order. While stinging nettle plants are not available at the time we release this episode, they will be available in the spring and can be found at the direct link in the show notes.
Yeah, live from Edgewood Nursery in Falmouth, Maine. This is the so-called Plant of the Month podcast with myself, Tim Holland, and
Aaron Parker of Edgewood Nursery.
What's up, Aaron?
Oh, not too much. It's really winter again. It was down into single digits, and I have to remember to actually go outside and do something physical every day, or else I get easily distracted by computer bullshit and all, you know, reading seed catalogs and such.
Oh man, I know I've like turned into a nerd when I really like when I actually get excited to get like a Fedco catalog in the mail and I'm like reading all the little side banners in that. I think like those little personal touches on like that they put into their seed catalogs, like I think that's amazing. I think everybody should do stuff like that.
Yeah, Fedco has good catalog copy. It's actually entertaining to read. And you should definitely check out the J.L. Hudson catalog, which is like the left leaning tinge of Fedco just went off the cliff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Cool. Well, right up my alley. Oh, thank God, though, man, we're finally free. All our problems are solved now because Trump has been impeached. we don't even have to do this podcast anymore.
If only it was that simple.
We don't even have to do this podcast. We don't, you know, everything is just going to be easy from here on in.
Ooh, yeah. That would be nice.
It's funny because I was like listening to this podcast about civil war around the Trump stuff, and I was thinking, no, it's more likely going to be from collapse and it won't be civil war. But then after like all the shit that Trump and has been saying this last week, I'm like, man, I just don't know.
Yeah, some of that like Jesus stuff around Trump kind of freaks me out. I just can't imagine being that into anyone. And the fact that so many people are that into Trump is a bit terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, luckily we're not going to live forever. Luckily, you know, the earth is going to explode in a couple billion years and all of this will be forgotten.
Yeah, we probably won't be alive to see the worst of it if it goes south, which it's not looking great right now.
Well, on a lighter note,
yeah, you gotta have some hope, or you're just gonna give up.
That's right. And you know what I have a lot of hope for? Stinging nettle.
Ooh, that's one that I think you can probably count on. Even after the apocalypse, there's gonna be some stinging nettle hanging out.
Hell yeah! I mean, it's funny because my parents always used to tell me like after a nuclear holocaust, like cabbage is the food that you need to eat, and like I'm kind of wondering like why not broccoli. You know, why not stinging nettle after a nuclear holocaust? I don't know. So, yeah, we're like this month we decided to do stinging nettle, another plant that we both have some experience with. You obviously have a lot more than I do.
Yeah, I've been growing stinging nettle for several years, and every year I find myself eating more and more of it. And it's so abundant, so tasty. There's a lot of different dishes you can make with it. And we'll definitely get into a lot of that culinary stuff, but it's also just super healthy, really nutrient dense, a lot of good stuff going on there. So in the first thing in the spring, when those perennial shoots start to come up, I often feel like I'm really craving some like nice fresh vegetables out of the garden. And that's one of the first ones that I'm really going to.
Yeah. I mean, it grows like mint. What blew me away, because I'd never grown it before, and I'd really, like, the only thing I knew about stinging nettle is once I was taking a piss off of a highway in Europe, and I got all messed up afterwards, and I was like, what the hell was that? And they were like, that's stinging nettle, mate. And I was like, oh my God. And now 10 years later, I'm growing
it on purpose.
I'm eating it. But I like it because it grows like mint. It's like one of these plants that I just threw in a couple different spots in my yard, didn't water or anything. And then when I came back at the end of the summer, you know, it was doing really well in all three places that I planted it, and was able to eat a bunch of it. And that was like, you know, that was really exciting. That was cool.
Nice. Yeah. So botanically, I would describe the way that stinging nettle grows as an herbaceous rhizome spreader. So rhizomes, a lot of people think of as roots. They're really underground stems. And one of the ways that that's kind of interestingly relevant for growing stinging nettle is it actually layers really well, which is something that you can often do with woody plants. But you can actually just bend over a stinging nettle stem onto the ground or into a pot, and wherever that stem touches the ground, it'll root in there. So if you're just getting your patch started from, you know, a division or a seedling or whatever, you can kind of direct where you want the plant to move into and how you want it to fill in by just bending stems.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, kind of like the way, like, whatever, my mustard green falls over on its side, and then it's like, looks like I have 20 plants there or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. And like the first I'd really heard people talking about stinging nettle as like a medicinal and edible plant was one of the, like, my instructors in Denver, this woman, Stephanie, who was on my podcast, and she was just talking about, like, it was her favorite vegetable to cook with. It, like, replaced spinach to make dal, you know, but also, like, as a medicinal plant. It's like, is it a nervine? Is that?
Yeah. Nervine, also people call it nutritive just because it's got a lot of nutrition in it. I don't know that much about the medicinal use of nettles. It's so high in iron that a lot of people recommend it for women because of the iron they lose in menstruation. And often people recommend making like a nettle vinegar. So you can infuse it in vinegar, and that will pull a lot of the mineral nutrition out. And it's like kind of a convenient way to have nettles around through the season when it's not really available as a vegetable anymore. But it also dries really nicely. We'll talk some more about that maybe.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. Speaking of it drying, it's like I'd never had the dried nettle before, but, we were talking about, oh, let's make some food with nettle before we did this. And so we made these, chickpea nettle omelets. And, I couldn't really taste the nettle so much cause I put so much sulfur salt and curry and shit in there, but it was awesome to just take a dried leaf and mix it in with a dry flour and make a high nutrient breakfast snack or whatever.
Yeah, it's a great way to kind of preserve some of that vegetable nutrition from the garden in a simple, low energy way to use during the winter months when there's not so much vegetables available. It's really easy to, like, throw a handful of dried nettles into a soup. Those garbanzo bean pancake things were really tasty. I've never had those before. I'll definitely be making those again.
Well, you know, you're welcome, man. You're welcome. But yeah, it was like one of these things that, I don't know. I don't make them a lot, but every once in a while it's like, oh, it's nice to have a omelet or whatever. What else about stinging nettle? Like, I thought the dried, I was thinking the, like, as the dried nettle, I mean, you could use that just as a spice that you put in anything. You could put it on popcorn. You could put it on, you know, you put it in tea, soups. And it dries like mint.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So super easy to dry. The way that I harvest nettle kind of through the season is when it first comes up, I'll harvest the whole shoot, and eat the leaves and the tender stems. It does sting. Some people are just really careful when they're harvesting to avoid getting many stings and don't sweat a few. I don't particularly like being stung. So I just wear gloves when I'm harvesting it. And then as soon as it's dried or cooked, the sting is denatured. And so it's not a problem anymore. I usually just steam the nettles for like a minute, just until they kind of, go limp, and then they're ready to eat. And I think they're delicious that way. And they'll keep growing and growing and growing. And sometime around like kind of end of June, the nettles are usually like waist high, and that's when I usually harvest them for drying. So I'll take the whole, 2 foot high plant and hang them in bundles to dry. And then once they're crispy dry, I'll just strip off the leaves. And that's just the easiest way that I've found to process them for drying.
The thing that, I like about stinging nettle is that it's like, it's not, or as I was looking at all these like nutrient charts earlier that I was showing you, it's like, people talk about nutrient dense kale is. And so I was like trying to compare kale with stinging nettle, and like, there are some things that kale exceeds at, I think like vitamin C or something, but like protein, vitamin D. I don't remember what the other one,
I think vitamin A, nettle was really high in. I think iron also really high.
And yeah, and the thing with iron also, it's like for women's stuff, that's the thing that I hate about medicinal herbs is like, you'll get so much conflicting information. And then like, I don't understand why doctors don't just study this shit and like put out like definitive shit on it, because it's like, these things are really effective and it shouldn't be that hard to prove. Right. I mean, like, I don't understand why if you go to WebMD, you just can't get like clear information. For instance, like, like some web pages say it's good for pregnancy. Some people say it's bad. Some people say it's like, but it's like good for milk production is what they were saying, is like, if you're lactating, it's good for milk. They would say that the vitamin D, another thing that I think is cool about stinging nettle is if you think about the way like, we co-evolve with plants or whatever. One of the things I was reading is about how like the vitamin D in stinging nettle, when you eat it like in the early spring, it like, helps your body recover from like the cold and get like wakes your blood up or something. It's like helps your blood circulation.
That's interesting. I've never heard that one. Vitamin D? I don't really think
of it. Or maybe it was iron. I'm sorry. Okay. I always get those two confused because okay. I don't think about those.
I don't think they're being plant sources of vitamin D.
Well, I'm glad we have an adult in the room.
Yeah, that's like an animal products and mushrooms thing.
Oh man. So, but yeah, I mean like the stinging nettle bushes you have are like what, like, 20 square feet or something. It's like, you can just walk over with a chainsaw and just cut down like 100 pounds of stinging nettle.
Yeah, pretty much. And the weird thing is here, it actually took me a little bit of effort to get them to establish. I got my original plants from my neighbor who had like a garden bed full of nettles that she had planted. And I, took a chunk where they were kind of escaping the bed, and I planted it, and it just didn't do anything. It stayed alive, but, didn't really produce. And it was just that the soil here was so dry and so weak that they were really just struggling. So eventually how I got that really nice patch of nettles, was by making a Hugel culture bed. Huh. So I had some rotten wood lying around, and I kind of pulled that into a rough pile and put a bunch of compost on it, planted some nettles on there, and those really took off. Both the like extra nutrition from compost and the extra water holding capacity from the buried wood, really, really did the trick.
Another thing about stinging nettle is the taste. I mean, it's funny because my nettle are all in Hugel. One of them is in Hugel culture, and that one's doing really well. The other one's in like a swampy area. The taste of stinging nettle is really good. And that's like, I think one of the most important things to point out is that, it's just a really, it's good and it grows like crazy. And unlike some of the greens, like dandelions, which have like a strong flavor that like not everyone will like, you could give stinging nettle. There's no one you give stinging nettle to, and they'll be like, this is gross. Unless they're like
Unless they just hate vegetables.
Right. Yeah. Cause it's just like,
which is a thing.
Yeah. But so it's like, you know, like for, you know, it's like imagining, you know, because of like the new, it has like so much of certain nutrients that aren't in those other greens that we were talking about, like kale or spinach or something, you know, like you were saying, like you mix these things together and you've got a real complete multivitamin medley going on.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, what else about stinging nettle? What else about...
Well, we could talk about the sting for a minute. And the sting of stinging nettle is really interesting, especially if you look at it really, really closely or with a magnifying glass. You can see that it's basically like a tiny hypodermic needle filled with acid. And that needle is actually made of silica. So it's like a little glass needle that when you brush against it, sticks into your skin and breaks off. Which can be pretty unpleasant. I don't find it particularly bad, and I don't get a strong reaction to it, but some people do. So, you know, once you get your first nettle sting, you'll be aware of whether it's something you need to be really careful of to avoid, or whether it's something that, you know, is kind of inconsequential. But the sting itself can also have medicinal value, mostly for treating things like arthritis. Kind of in the same way that some people use bee stings to treat arthritis, you can sting yourself with nettles in the same way, and it kind of causes some inflammation. It's uncomfortable at first, but as the pain and inflammation of the nettle sting passes, it also, for whatever reason, I don't really understand its method of action, but it reduces inflammation and pain caused by arthritis and tendonitis.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I don't know that much about it, but I think what I was reading was just like that it helps circulate the.
Yeah, I could believe that. I have done it just for like sort of repetitive motion injuries. You know, I had like, you know, pain in my wrists from pruning or something like that. And I was like, oh, I'm going to try this urtification thing, which is what it's called when you sting yourself with nettles. And it hurt for like maybe a minute, and then it was like kind of inflamed for a while, like less than an hour, and then it felt totally better. So it was definitely worthwhile rather than kind of, you know, suffering for days with an injury that's like kind of just lingering.
What kind of injury was it?
It was like pain in my wrist from pruning, like pulling hand pruners for several hours is bad. It's just like, it's a bad thing to do. If you have a lot of pruning to do, it's best to like kind of break it up with doing something else. But for whatever reason, I just had to get done.
Just had to get it done.
And paid for it at the end of the day.
Another thing that I thought was cool about stinging nettle is how it's like, it feels like next, I mean, I would say sorrel. I'm sure there's other plants that are like this, but this plant feels like a universal plant. It's in India, it's in Europe, it's in the Americas. I'm sure it's in Asia as well.
Yeah, it's all over the world. Often despised, because it is pretty aggressive. It'll grow everywhere. Really common in ditches and stuff, but I think everywhere that it grows, there are people that appreciate it. And use it for all its numerous benefits.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I was like, as I was like reading all this like old like European shit, and they were just talking about how it was like a class thing where poor people, you know, they'd live in like the shitty, wet, muddy places and
the fens,
and they'd have to like, you know, and they could just go into ditches and make medicine and food out of stinging nettle. And so I like that, like it's like a, you know, working persons, or not even working, just it's a decolonizing vegetable.
So. Yeah. And often those foods that have been relegated to like the poorest people are often the most nutritious. And at least in the case of, like French peasant food, are often those cuisines get like elevated to super high class and desirable foods eventually.
It's, well, it's another thing I was, cause I've been like messing around with cheeses and stuff. And I was, thinking like, oh, it'd be cool to garnish cheese with, stinging nettle just to give it that extra nutrient stuff.
Yeah.
But then when I started looking up stuff, I realized that, in France they make, rennet or R-E-N-N-E-T, rennet with stinging nettle.
Yeah. Vegetable rennet is made out of nettle often.
Yeah, that's cool. Like, so my homie down the street is a cheesemaker, and so we're both, Anthony, who came and bought some plants from me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, small world. And yeah, so I was like, we were talking about that, and he was getting all excited, and he's like, oh, man, that's fucking crazy. He's like, I thought you could only do that with thistle. And I'm like, I didn't know you could do that with thistle, but I don't even know what rennet is, so that's cool.
Yeah. So, rennet is something that has enzymes in it that makes milk curdle. And traditionally, I think more animal rennets were used, which is like the lining of a calf's stomach. And that's, I think, a bit harder to get these days. So more vegetable rennets are becoming more and more common.
Wait, did you say a cat's stomach?
Calf.
Okay, I was going to say. I thought I wanted to make sure I heard that right.
That'd be kind of amazing.
Yeah, another thing that just blew my mind about this plant is its use for cloth and net and dye. Like World War II, you know, all the German camouflage was made with stinging nettle.
Really? I did not know that.
And like, I feel like at the beginning of World War I or something, like, you know, the British Army placed an order for, like, you know, 100 tons of stinging nettle to make uniforms.
Fascinating.
And yeah.
So I didn't realize that the fiber of nettle was used into the industrial age. Like I've heard you can make, you know, cordage out of nettle stems. They're super fibrous. That's not surprising, but I haven't actually done it myself. So that's cool. Yeah. I think you were saying something earlier about it being like as good as linen. As a fiber plant. I wonder what it would take to do that on like a homestead scale.
I don't know if what, I'm sure we'll find out at some point. Just wait for the, you know.
You mentioned World War II. Another interesting piece of plant fiber lore is I think World War II was milkweed fluff was used in, I forget, it might have been like cold weather jackets or life jackets or something like that. But they had like programs where they had like American school children out in the like ditches and roadsides collecting milkweed fluff.
Really?
For the war effort. Yeah.
I mean, I wish it wasn't for war, but I mean,
yeah,
still kind of
fucked
cool,
up. But it's cool that milkweed fluff is kind of equivalent to goose down in its its insulation properties.
That's
amazing.
I mean,
it's hard to wash, which can be an issue, but it's a neat fiber material.
Cat, I love bringing up this fact that like cattails also almost won the Second World War. Like they were about to, like, if World War II had kept going on, they would have had to like they had plans of like ramping up cattail production.
Whoa.
To make starches for the troops and shit.
Interesting. Yeah, I think cattails produce more starch per acre than anything else. Cattails are a pretty amazing plant. We should probably do an episode on those.
I still haven't eaten them though, so we'll have to wait until after spring.
Yeah, the cattail shoots I think are probably my favorite part. Well, they're like super crunchy and tasty.
Well,
they're mild for sure, but
I'm gonna have to
nice
clear
flavor.
Out that swamp of a bunch of those cattails, so
yeah,
we'll have a whole bunch of cattails to
yeah,
eat for
you
that.
Got plenty of cattail, and they'll just keep coming
because Lord knows my wife won't eat them with me, so. I've tried, and she just won't do it. So, you know, I don't know if you know a lot about like the indigenous usage of, what do you know about the indigenous use of stinging nettle?
I don't know that much. I know that it was a staple, for some tribes in some areas, but I don't know much in the way of specifics. There's some interesting stuff about, how nettle is kind of native growing across most of the Northern Hemisphere. But most of the nettle that we see in North America growing wild is of European origin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
shocking.
The North American subspecies is just like not quite as aggressive. So when the European colonists brought nettle seeds, either on purpose or by accident, with them from Europe, those European genetics kind of followed colonization.
So I'm not decolonizing my diet when I eat stinging nettles.
Hard to say. I mean,
it's a settler snack.
I don't know. It's one of those ones where it's like really complicated. There's no good answer. Kind of like Jerusalem artichokes or sunchokes. There's a lot of debate as to whether they're actually native here in Maine, or if they just were brought here by indigenous people pre-colonization, and it kind of doesn't matter.
Right.
It's, you know, kind of semantics at that point. Like, nettles were here before white people, and they'll probably be here after we're gone.
After the white genocide is completed.
Or just all the people die because we fuck up the environment so much. But, yeah.
That's why we got to recycle, man.
There's some interesting botany there to be explored by someone.
I think, like, I was looking at this website. It's like the cascades.org, ncascades.org had a bunch of stuff about stinging nettles in the Pacific Northwest. And the thing I thought that was interesting, well, warriors and hunters using the stinging nettle to keep themselves alert during battle. I was also reading that Roman troops used stinging nettle to keep themselves awake. But one of the things I liked was like that they, in Cree folklore, they associate the nettle with the coyote, and the nettle folk tales remind the listeners of man's foolish decision to label the plant as a weed. Yeah, stinging nettle was once golden with shimmering leaves and a bright aura. The human beings did not pay their respect to this plant medicine, taking it for granted, passing by it without offering tobacco. In time, it was turned color to blend in with the other plants and grew stinging hairs to catch the human beings by surprise and sting them. That made us pay respect. And, yeah, I just love the poetry and like those kinds of myths, and I thought that was cool. Another thing I thought that was interesting from this blog was talking about how they would use stinging nettle in ceremonial uses, and they would burn it in sweat lodges for pneumonia. And
interesting,
yeah. So I think that's cool. And also, like, if I have a lot of allergies, and so people talk about using nettles for as an allergen and hay fever. I don't know. Have you used it? Do you know anybody who's used it for that stuff?
Yeah, I actually have. I have heard of that. My stepmom had some success treating allergies with just like strong nettle tea. And I think to use it medicinally in that way, it's usually a tea, and you make like a quart of strong tea and like really let it steep and get all the goodness out of it, and then you like drink that throughout the day. Which is like cold nettle tea is actually pretty nice, especially in the summer.
It's tough, man. It's tough to always have to blow your nose and, you know. What else is there? I mean, is there anything else we're missing? I'm sure there's a ton of stuff that we're missing. I could just read off 1,000 things about, you know, medicinal uses, but it seems like we've covered most of them. Like they say it's good for the liver, right? Is that what they say?
I mean, there's tons of plants that are supposed to be good for your liver.
I know. It's like, and I can never tell if my liver is working or not.
I assume, since I'm not dying imminently, that my liver is functioning good. So I certainly wouldn't, you know, mind having more good things for my liver. But one of the food harvests that you can get from nettles is the seeds. And the seeds are really quite small, but they're supposed to be, like the rest of the plant, super nutritious, and something that, you know, it's well after most of the other parts of the plant that you would harvest. So it kind of just extends the season of nettle harvest. Which also reminds me of something that I wanted to mention.
You could put it on in salad, just sprinkle it in like a nut.
Yeah, totally. Is one of the sort of ecological niches that nettle fills is it's the primary host plant for red admiral butterflies, which are quite common all across the Northern Hemisphere, all over the place in Europe and North America, and really common around here. But once we planted nettles, I started noticing so many more of these butterflies, which was really cool, and started noticing that they're caterpillars, like, crawling around, and they get huge, like, let's say, like, almost 3 inches long, giant black spiky caterpillars.
Oh, cool.
And it's, you know, just one more thing that kind of fits into the ecosystem. And those big caterpillars are great food for birds. And they're all kind of, you know, the more diversity you have and the more insect population you have and all that stuff, it all just feeds into having that much more of a healthy ecosystem, which is just good for everybody.
Another thing I like about stinging nettle is it doesn't seem like it really has many pests, but it does have like these little weird black beetles that like to like,
yeah,
but it's like, they don't damage the leaves. Like,
I don't know what those are.
They just hang out.
Yeah. I'm just chilling. They're doing something, but I don't know what it is. But yeah, that's always a good sign for a plant being sort of ecologically useful is that there are insects on it. And it's feeding insects as well as humans and all that. The red admiral butterflies, actually, when their population cycles are high, they'll completely, defoliate the nettles. They'll eat them down to nothing. But because it happens it happens late enough in the season, it's not a problem for me. Like, I've already harvested plenty of material from those nettles that, if they, are going to eat all that, doesn't really bother me, and it doesn't really seem to bother the nettles. They'll sprout back up once the caterpillars are done eating and keep on pumping out the greens.
Yeah, I love plants that can do that and just keep going. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like mint. I mean, it's like a weed. It's awesome. It's great. And it dries the same way. It always breaks my heart when I see a chicken running around my yard with a big ass monarch caterpillar or something that's
Do they eat the monarch caterpillars?
I mean, I think they're monarchs. They're these big green things, or it's like the B-movie monarch. What, like the...
Oh, yeah, Viceroy?
Whatever it is.
So there's
like green and with the yellow and black spots, and they look like monarchs.
So the caterpillars that look like monarchs, I think, are black swallowtail butterflies.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And then there's a adult phase butterfly that also looks like an adult monarch called a Viceroy. Because black swallowtails grow, or they feed on Apiaceae, so you find them in like carrots and dill and lovage, stuff like that. Anyway.
I don't know.
Caterpillars.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's good to know. I'm just learning about bugs. Like, we didn't have bugs in Denver. All I had was like black widows and... and ants. Like, we didn't really have bugs, man. I come out here and I feel like I'm in the Amazon. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Bugs are fascinating to no end. I really got into the iNaturalist phone app this year because insects are pretty hard to identify, at least for people who don't know what they're doing, like me. But having this phone app where I can just snap a couple pictures of an insect and at least get like the family pretty much automatically. It was pretty cool.
Cause yeah, I use that app to identify plants.
Yeah.
It misidentified so many plants
for
me that I was just like, I mean, it would say, this is a plum tree. It's like, that is not a fucking plum tree.
Yeah.
For
it to work on plants, you kind of need flowers. Like, if you can see flowers in the picture, it works a lot better. But yeah, there's no AI good enough to really do plant identification at this point. Which is one nice thing about iNaturalist is not only does it have like the AI that says, you're probably looking at such and such, but then it also has like a social media community aspect where actual people who know what they're talking about, hopefully, will confirm or tell you you're wrong with your identification.
That's I've seen that thing in there. I've just never, I don't know. I just didn't look at that. I didn't look that deeply into it. We got, it's easy to start from seed.
Yep.
It's easy to propagate.
Yeah. Super easy to propagate. If you know anybody around who has some, they are probably some rhizomes starting to sneak out into a place where they maybe shouldn't be growing, and your friends will likely be able to give you divisions. You can also buy them from me anytime the ground isn't frozen solid. And there are some different varieties of nettle that I'll have available next year. So I'll have the regular Urtica dioica. And then I've got one called Fen Nettle. That is a little bit less stingy. So it still is covered in hairs, but most of them aren't stinging. That one has like much, much larger leaves and stems. So the leaves are at least twice as big as the regular, species Urtica dioica, which makes them easier to use. A little bit later into the season, as the stems get too tough and fibrous to eat, you need to start tearing off the leaves off the stem to use it as a fresh vegetable. And if those leaves are huge, it makes it easier. So it can be nice to have multiple varieties of different kinds of nettle.
That's cool. I wonder what kind of, I probably just got the normal nettle from you, right?
I think so. But I'll definitely hook you up with this fen nettle, because I think it's
plus
also,
it sounds like fentanyl in like, you know, people.
It's much less dangerous. But I think it would grow great at your place because they like wet spots. Like a fen is like a swamp area. So you've got plenty of swamp
areas. I got plenty of swamp area. Yep. My tick farm. my tick and leech farm. Oh, shit. Yeah.
And if you want to check out like a picture on the internet of a really wild nettle, I think it's called Urtica ferox. It's a type of tropical nettle that has just some really extravagant stings on it. It's worth a peek.
Cool. Yeah, it's my one of the kids from my kids' nursery school. Anyway, whatever. He just moved up the street from us, and his mom was telling us there's tons of nettles on this path right across from our house. And I was like, I've always looked at that path. I've never gone down there. Like, and it's just crazy how, like this knowledge of like, you know, using nettles is like, if you're like in the city and you're around, like, it's just not common, but then like you meet people who, you know, have like I feel like in Maine, there's like a, I don't know, like a deeper, There's a deeper ecological practice here, or maybe not ecological, but like people, there's a lot more people here who've like learned how to like wild harvest plants from their grandparents than there are in a lot of other places. Yeah, I find. And, or maybe I'm just coming across way more people who just like, who I'm just like shocked at how much they know about.
Yeah.
Like plants and shit. It's interesting.
I don't know. I've never really lived outside of Maine. So I don't have a good comparison. And when you're like passing through a place or traveling, you don't get really the same sense of the place and of the people as you do like really living there.
Right. Or you can just like project just what you want to think about anywhere you go.
Yeah. Or you like the people that you're going to find while traveling are not like really representative.
Totally. Well, I don't know if there's, anything else about nettle. I feel like that's most of the anecdotal stuff I've learned about nettle.
I think we did that plant a decent amount of justice. And, did we get any questions about Turkish rocket?
I had, a comrade in Indiana, who was, talking about the Turkish rocket that he had, and he was wondering if we just had like a late blooming Turkish rocket, because the Turkish rocket that they got from Restoration Seeds is the company. That's where I used to buy mine. Mine never grew when I got from them. But he was saying that his are not like fuzzy leaves.
Oh,
and
interesting.
That his are, or they looked like they weren't fuzzy, I should say. He didn't say that. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. He said that they were just like, they looked very different than the ones you have.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know.
I'd be very interested to try growing out.
Maybe he wants to trade or something.
Yeah, it'd be cool to swap some seeds and see if they are substantially different when grown in the same conditions. But it's a species that has a pretty broad native range and is naturalized very widely. So it wouldn't be surprising if there were some, you know, genetic variance from place to place or population to population.
Yeah. What he was asking me is, have you tried the, Italian Turkish rocket? Because that's supposed to be the cold hardest. That was like the question. That was his question.
Yeah. I don't actually know the origins. Most of my Turkish rocket, came from my friend Lisa Fernandez's garden. I don't know where she got it. And then I have another patch in another area of the garden that I'd swapped seeds with someone, and just to get a little bit extra, sort of broaden the gene pool a little bit, make sure it wasn't getting too inbred. And they both seem very similar. The stuff from Lisa is maybe a little bit larger, but that might just be soil conditions. So yeah, I don't know, but it definitely seems totally winter hardy here. Definitely taken -22 Fahrenheit, right, with no problems. So, I don't anticipate any issues.
Yeah. But the other thing this person was saying is that, cause I don't know, when you see the word rocket in Europe, it's arugula.
Yeah, for sure.
And so
it's a terrible common name.
Yeah. This person was really, associating it with arugula.
Yeah.
And, talking about arugula, and I was like, no, it's not an arugula, but
it's not arugula
in the same
from
family,
Turkey,
but it's this. Yeah. It's
yeah. That's one of the things about common names that just kind of irk me is, I think we can do better with common names, and it's entirely possible to change common names, especially for unusual plants, just by starting to use a different name.
Right.
So Turkish rocket, not a great common name because it makes everyone think of arugula. And Turkish rocket is not that similar to arugula. It's much more like a mustard green. Another one is Jerusalem artichoke.
Right.
Which has nothing to do with Jerusalem or artichokes. And it's just a bad common name. My favorite common name for Jerusalem artichoke is pterosaur, which is what my friend Will Bonzel calls them. So I'm trying to
pterosaurs.
Whenever I talk about that plant, try and mention that I call them pterosaurs now.
I call them fartichokes.
That's a pretty good one.
So other comments.
That
I got
accurate.
I actually got some great feedback on this project. I got another one of the other people who reached out was from the Bayou Food Forest. That's a food forest that was planted directly in the path of the Bayou pipeline in down there, and so they're down there growing bananas and sharing banana trees and
nice. Yeah, I heard from them as well. It sounds like a cool
project.
Oh, they
hit you up?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I sent them some seeds and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, he hit me up about moringa. He was like, y'all should do moringa and sweet potatoes.
Yeah. I don't know that much about either of those. I could definitely talk for a while about sweet potatoes, but I think that would probably be a good one to bring in some guests or a guest on.
Yeah, he really wanted to come on and talk about
sweet. Let's talk.
They wanted to come on and talk about, but moringa too. I was like, I had never even heard of that plant.
Yeah, moringa's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's cool.
If you're in a tropical climate, it's definitely one to check out and probably grow. The whole plant, it's a tree. It's edible leaves, edible seed pods, edible roots. Really flavorful, really nutritious. Yeah, an old friend of mine married an Indian woman. And she's like, can you grow moringa around here? I really want moringa. And I was like, oh, yeah, people are stoked on moringa. It's hard to grow around here. Another friend did grow a bunch in a greenhouse. And they grew amazingly, like, you know, over 6 feet tall in a single year.
And then they died down?
And then they died, like, just outright died.
But growing it as an I'm kind of interested to grow it as an annual. I'm
just certainly worth some experimentation.
Yeah, it got me pumped reading what this person showed me about moringa. I was just like, whoa, that's fucking awesome. And then, the number one plant that people wanted to hear more about was elderberries, actually.
Yeah.
So we'll do an episode
on elderberries soon.
Yeah.
Maybe the next one.
Yeah, and if you have questions about stinging nettle or anecdotes or, you know, suggestions or comments or whatever.
Yeah, definitely email us, or if possible, record a voice memo on your smartphone and email that to us so that we can just plug that right in rather than us reading your email.
And that would be so much cooler. And you can send it to SOLE@SOLEONE.org. And what's your email?
EdgewoodLandscapes@gmail.com.
Join us for Kiteline, a weekly radio program on Channel Zero Network that focuses on issues in the prison system. With over 50 episodes already released, you can hear informative and riveting stories about the impact of prisons on people both inside and outside of the prison walls and how they fight back. Kiteline is intended as means of communication between people across prison walls. Our goal at Kiteline is to amplify the voices of those within the prison system while encouraging dialogue with those on the outside. Hear us on the Channel Zero Network and visit our website for more information or previous episodes at kitelineradio.noblogs.org.